This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
This is an incredible story. Fascinating story. So I'm just going to dive right in. Sage Steele, pretty well-known former ESPN host. She has now disclosed that she interviewed President Biden. This is 3 years ago. It was during the pandemic. It was about how sports leagues were coping with the restrictions of the pandemic. She tells Fox News Digital that her bosses at ESPN at the time, she since has left the network in sort of an acrimonious departure, gave her a script. She says, it was so structured, and I was told, you will say every word that we write out. You will not deviate from the script. She says, to the word, every single question was scripted, gone over dozens of times by many editors and executives. Absolutely. I was on script and was told not to deviate. It was very much, this is what you will ask. This is how you will say it. No follow-ups. What kind of network tells an experienced anchor, you can't ask a follow-up question depending on what the guest says, the guest in this case, the President of the United States? She says, this went up to the fourth floor where all the bosses, the top executives, the decision makers, the president of our company, the CEO, where they all worked. Now, she went on to say that she doesn't know, but had the sense that Biden had the questions in advance and therefore had prepared answers. Now, I got to be careful on that because she doesn't know that. I would remind everybody that this is the same president who just a couple months ago turned down a Super Bowl interview with CBS. Second straight year, the previous one was with Fox. Apparently that was too risky. So leaving aside whether or not Biden had any heads up, ESPN needs to address this. No follow-ups, follow the script, dozens of times, top executives. Meanwhile, Dan Rather, and I covered much of his career, has a posting online saying, a few people have asked why I vehemently oppose Trump. And let me pause here for just a half a second. You know, Dan Rather, in many ways, was a very accomplished journalist. But there is just simply no question when you look at his career that he was a liberal. In fact, what led to his departure from CBS News was a story he did when about George W. Bush, supposedly having gone AWOL during the National Guard. That story relied on sources who were not reliable. That story caused a huge uproar at CBS that later resulted in Rather losing his anchor chair after 25 years. So this is what he says now. Let me make this perfectly clear. It's not about politics. I voted for both parties. I would take a wild guess and say he hasn't voted for a Republican in a very long time. It's about me as a patriot rejecting a cheating, lying, racist, treasonous, fascist, and vile man who attacks the free press and wants to lead the country I love. So then he says it's not about politics. All right. You know, some interesting comments from Sean Hannity on last night's Fox show about abortion And this sort of matches what Donald Trump told me about abortion in our interview. And obviously, he is in pretty regular touch with Hannity. And here's Sean saying, we know what the playbook is, speaking about Democrats. They will demagogue on abortion. Republicans, they better have a good answer. They also need to understand where the country is. Hannity describing himself as pretty pro-life, but said that Republican politicians would be wise not to embrace a ban on abortion before 15 weeks of pregnancy, which is just what Donald Trump says. He told me 16 weeks, then he made it 15 weeks. Supposedly, he's going to announce his position next week. That's where the country is, says Hannity. And if Republican politicians don't understand that, then they're going to get their asses kicked and they're going to lose. Interesting the way the pendulum has swung on this after the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. Here's an interesting item plucked from the New York Post. Tiger Woods. He's going to play in the Masters next week. And I know a lot of people, Tiger Woods, he's lost it. He's over the hill. You know, it was in 2019 that Tiger Woods miraculously won the Masters again, you know, well after the peak of his career. So a friend, an unnamed friend of Woods, who's now 48, by the way, he's working really hard in the gym. He's eating right. He's even eliminated sex. He does that now when he's preparing. No sex until the tournament is over. He doesn't want anything to take away his focus. Now, right now he's single, according to this piece. His 6-year relationship with girlfriend Erica Herman, former waitress at his restaurant in Jupiter, Florida, ended acrimoniously in 2023. She took him to court. Before that, he dated skiing star Lindsey Vonn. But a little bit of abstinence, according to this piece at least, for Tiger. I want to dive into this one. And I have a lot of interest in it because yesterday, I did my friend Guy Benson's radio show. It's a radio show podcast with Fox. And he played some sound that was very eye-catching. But let me lead off now with story number one. Newsmax deleted a post on X about Trump after readers got really upset. And it linked to a Newsmax page that showed a Reuters wire server story. Very common for, you know, even the biggest news outlets. You know, we'll have stories from the AP or Reuters or other wire services. The Newsmax story was headlined, Trump calls migrants animals in Michigan stop. Adding that people living in the U.S. illegally do not commit violent crimes at a higher rate than native-born citizens. The caption was also taken from Reuters. Donald Trump called immigrants in the United States illegally animals and not human in a speech in Michigan, resorting to the degrading rhetoric he has employed time and again on the campaign trail. So, in reality, according to this piece, Trump's comments were kind of muddled, but look, this is very clear cut. He was talking about the killing of the young woman, Lincoln Riley. Trump said she was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. Former president going on to say, no, people say, don't call them animals, say humans. I said, no, they're not humans, they're animals. Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animals, sir, when you're talking about these people. So Newsmax deleted the tweet, and an anchor said that a low-level social media staffer was responsible for the initial post. Then Newsmax posted this update. saying, we posted to Twitter, X, a Reuters story that failed to say President Trump's comments about animals at a campaign speech in Michigan referred to violent criminals. We've removed it from our account. And what Guy Benson did is he had a truncated version of the Trump comments put out by the Biden campaign that completely left out the context, that did indeed make it sound like Trump was talking about every single illegal immigrant when it's clear. Now, you can argue he shouldn't use these words regardless, but, you know, I don't think that many Americans would get upset about that kind of language, as inflammatory as it is. Somebody who brutally murdered a young woman in her prime after illegally entering the United States. Meanwhile, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg in the hush money case, that's supposed to start in just over 10 days, turned down the request by the former president's lawyers to delay the trial due to prejudicial publicity. Yes, there's been a lot of media coverage of this trial. That is true. In a court filing, Bragg's office said, defendant simply can't have it both ways. Complaining about the prejudicial effect of pretrial publicity while seeking to pollute the jury pool himself by making baseless and inflammatory accusations about this trial, specific witnesses, individual prosecutors, and the court itself. And goes on to say that they can pick a fair and impartial jury. Well, I do think it will be a challenge to find 12 jurors who are going to be fair to Donald Trump in Manhattan. I mean, yes, New York's Trump's hometown, but it's also one of the most liberal blue cities around.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
I want to get to story number two, which just continues to break my heart. And what is so revealing about this moment, I'm talking here about Israel and the killing of those aid workers, volunteers to Jose Andres' World Central Kitchen, who were killed by Israeli airstrikes. And Andres did a interview where he's actually on camera and he is not buying the notion that this is some kind of freak accident. Israel has apologized, grave mistake and all that, but I mean, how do you undo the damage of killing these human beings who are just trying to be good humanitarians? Here is Jose. They were targeted systematically, he says, car by car. And this happened over more than 1.5, 1.8 kilometers. So this was not just a bad luck situation where, oops, we dropped the bomb in the wrong place. This was a very defined humanitarian convoy that had signs on top, in the roof. And if you've seen the pictures, that is true. A very colorful logo that we are obviously very proud of. It's very clear who we are and what we do. What I know is we were targeted deliberately, nonstop, until everybody was dead in this convoy. That cannot be the role, he says, of an army. That cannot be the role of an army that has hundreds of drones above Gaza in any single moment. The humanitarians and civilians should never be paying the consequences of war. This is a basic principle of humanity. At the time, this looks like it's not a war against terrorism anymore. It seems this is a war against humanity itself. You cannot be destroying every building. You cannot be destroying every hospital, every school. You cannot be targeting humanitarians. You cannot be targeting children. You cannot be fighting the basis of what humanity should be standing for. And the fallout here is dramatic on so many levels, but I have personally seen at least two or three really confrontational, tough interviews with Israeli officials and spokesmen. One with Dan Abrams on News Nation, one with Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe, and I'm sure there are others, where since the beginning of this war, when Israel was brutally attacked by Hamas, I never want anyone to forget that, I have not seen this level of vitriol and shock and attempts to hold Israel accountable during this long war. Remember, Hamas is still holding the hostages, and I don't know if that's ever going to be resolved. Joe Biden, who's supposed to talk to Bibi Netanyahu today, saying this is not a standalone incident. This conflict has been one of the worst in recent memory in terms of how many aid workers have been killed. President saying this is a major reason why distributing humanitarian aid in Gaza has been so difficult, because Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers trying to deliver desperately needed help to civilians. Karine Jean-Pierre saying that Biden called Jose Andres and vowed that he would make clear that aid workers must be protected. Yesterday's New York Times, an op-ed by Jose Andres, calling for major reforms in Israel's handling of the war. So you have this open split between the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Israel. It's been building for weeks because of the planned ground invasion of the densely populated portion of southern Gaza. You have Netanyahu basically thumbing his nose at his American allies, saying we're going to do this anyway. And I understand both the political and military imperatives of Netanyahu, who's also fighting for his own political survival, to try to wipe out Hamas. And, you know, in some extent, given the rising level of malnutrition and starvation, you know, Hamas bears some responsibility too. Hamas could surrender. But this is not like going into a hospital where Hamas terrorists are embedded with doctors and patients. This was different. It is almost inconceivable this happened. And here's another sort of sign of the times. Jon Favreau. He was a speechwriter for Barack Obama. He says that Biden doesn't deserve credit for being privately enraged, as I guess some stories have reported, about the 7 aid workers killed in Gaza. Bibi says it's unfortunate, it happens in war. Favreau saying that Biden looks weak. This in response to a report in Politico, suggesting that Biden will not change his policy when it comes to Israel, but he expressed private outrage over the civilian deaths. Spokesman John Kirby noting that over 200 aid workers have been killed in Gaza in this war. The president, says Favreau, doesn't get credit for being privately enraged when he still refuses to use leverage to stop the IDF, the Israeli military, from killing and starving innocent people. These stories only make him look weak. Well, you know, Biden's walking a tightrope. It's costing him politically. Obviously, the left wing of the Democratic Party increasingly opposed to Israel. This is also true, you know, those who refuse to criticize Hamas despite its horrible terror tactics, despite the fact that it takes civilian hostages, elderly hostages, teenage hostages, the sheer barbaric nature of the October 7th attack. But, I mean, here's the question I have to ask. In its determination to wipe out the terrorists, is Israel not just losing world support, that is evident, but is Israel, I don't know how else to put this, adopting some of the same tactics of its enemies? And look, I accept, despite what Jose Andres says, that this is was a tragic mistake, pending further investigation. But there's been too many tragic mistakes. And there are too many families who don't have food. And, you know, the U.S. has set up this floating base. And it's just, let's just say it hasn't been a priority for Israel to get the food and other humanitarian aid to the suffering and often innocent Palestinians. Now, is it also true that some of this aid gets stolen by Hamas to prop up its brutal military regime? Yeah. But this just stands as a I don't want to say symbolic, because seven people are dead. But let's just say a high-profile example of the kind of mistakes that you should not make in war. Now, in past wars, have there been, you know, friendly fire incidents where involving the U.S. and other countries where their own people were killed? Yes. War is awful. War is deadly. The fog of war involves a lot of mistakes. But I, again, these are people who are risking their lives to try to help prevent starvation, and seven of them are now dead. Hey, here's another story about the president. Biden administration finishing up today a plan to restrict presidents, translation, if Donald Trump wins the election, from unilaterally nixing civil service protections, says Politico, from large swaths of the federal workforce. And Trump has talked about this openly. In fact, he tried to do it in his last year in office, to move more of what he would regard as the deep state people from being sort of nonpartisan civil servants to being political appointees who could be replaced or fired by a president. The people involved could choose to waive their security or move to a role that does serve at the pleasure of the president. Federal workers who believe they're being stripped of their protections could challenge the move with the Merit Systems Protection Board. But here's the thing. All that is really being accomplished is this. The administration making it more time-consuming for a future president to reverse these rules. And this, you know, Office of Personnel Management Director just comes out and says, this rule is about making sure the American public can continue to count on federal workers to apply their skills and expertise in carrying out their jobs, no matter their personal political beliefs. But all of these rules and regulations have also made it virtually impossible to fire incompetent federal employees. So again, they're just sort of setting up roadblocks to what Trump might do if he becomes the 47th president after having served as the 45th president. Story number three. The Justice Department, as you know, has this antitrust lawsuit against Apple, and it may have gotten a boost from Jon Stewart. So Stewart had this show on Apple TV Plus. A show that had jokes, but also featured a lot of serious interviews. And on The Daily Show, where he now hosts once a week and he's the executive producer, Jon Stewart said that Apple, when he worked for Apple, urged him not to interview the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan. So now that he's back at the Daily Show, he brings Lina Khan on. And he said he tried to book her for an interview while working for Apple. But the company, quote, literally said, please don't talk to her. I didn't think they cared for you is what happened. So FTC spokesman said Stewart's staff had contacted the agency in 2022. But the talks broke down. Apple declining to comment. You know, I'd love to have one of these jobs where you're basically, you get paid a lot of money and you say, well, we have no comment. Like if you're the spokesman for X, you just refer everyone to a poop emoji for press inquiries. Or Apple or some other companies. You know, once in a while they'll put out statements, but by and large, yeah, sorry, no comment. So this, just to remind you, the DOJ suit, which also includes 16 state and DAs, state attorneys general and district attorneys, accused Apple of using restrictive policies to lock in consumers and box out competitors. And talks about how Apple is expanding its role as a TV and movie producer, which is true. People either get Apple TV with their Prime membership or they can subscribe separately. At the time, the Apple spokesman, oh, here's an actual comment from Apple. The lawsuit wrong on the facts and the law. We'll vigorously defend against it. So, one left-leaning advocate says that John Stewart's comments provide a useful illustration of the breadth of Apple's power and how it uses its clout to pick winners and losers across markets. But a more conservative research fellow at the Cato Institute said John Stewart's comments are not sufficient to show any evidence of anti-competitive behavior on Apple's part. Let's just say, though, it doesn't smell right.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Story four. This has been bubbling up, and I didn't know how seriously to take it. Now there's a story about it in the Huffington Post, and just to put it on your radar. The Biden administration is pushing back against some liberal advocates who are saying that Sonia Sotomayor should step down from the Supreme Court. KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, saying those are personal decisions, regardless of if it's Justice Sotomayor or any other justice on the bench. That is for them to make. That is not something we get involved in. But it is something for, obviously, any justice on the bench. They should be given the space and freedom to make that decision. So what's this about? Sonia Sotomayor is 69 years old. She has type 1 diabetes. And if Donald Trump wins in November, be another 4 years where if she has to leave the court for health reasons, he will get another justice, and you could have a 7-2 conservative majority. And all of this, of course, grows out of the Ruth Bader Ginsburg example. So here's Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal also saying, well, it's up to the justice to do this. Democratic senators are not publicly calling for this. But Blumenthal says, I'm very respectful of Justice Sotomayor. I have great admiration for her, but I think she really has to weigh the competing factors. We should learn a lesson. And it's not like there's any mystery here about what the lesson should be. Look, I don't know. A lot of people have diabetes. It doesn't sound like, you know, that Sonia Sotomayor is not going to be around that much longer. But in the case of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was battling cancer, had she stepped down earlier, significantly earlier, and had Barack Obama been able to name a replacement, we wouldn't have a situation where later on Mitch McConnell blocks Obama from naming Merrick Garland, and then with weeks to go, Donald Trump pushes through Amy Coney Barrett. So the libs are kind of freaking out, you know, because these are lifetime appointments. And it's like, you know, you're 69 anyway. By the way, you know, for all this pious talk about, oh, these are very personal decisions. I mean, they did kind of prod Stephen Breyer to step down from the court at a relatively advanced age. Longtime liberal who once worked for Ted Kennedy. And that led to Biden's appointment of Ketanji Brown Jackson. So these conversations take place. They're usually done quietly through intermediaries. Nobody wants to be heavy-handed about it. But you can understand, having been burned by RBG, why there would suddenly be this interest on the left. And the Democrats still have a one-seat majority in the Senate, so could push through a replacement. If that were to happen, it kind of sounds to me like it's not going to happen. But this is, you know, part of the Beltway chatter. And finally, story five. Popular accounts on Elon Musk's X, formerly Twitter. When do we get to stop saying formerly Twitter? Anybody who has even a passing familiarity knows it's now called X. I didn't agree with the name change, but they were surprised last night to find out that suddenly their blue verification badge was back. Washington Post says they had been gifted premium subscriptions. So this used to be a very huge deal. I don't know if it still is. Going forward, says Musk, all X accounts with over 2,500 verified subscriber followers will get premium features for free, and accounts with over 5,000 will get premium plus for free. Musk said this a little over a week ago. So what's going on here? You know, it used to be that if you were a verified public figure, you got a blue check mark, and that was kind of a status symbol. Then Musk said, oh, no, you got to pay for this, $8 a month. And I did it for a different reason. I could care less about the blue check mark. But I wanted to be able to use another Twitter tool to post on the Media Buzz Twitter account as opposed to my personal account. And that became too complicated, and so it didn't even work. But what's happening here is, you know, Twitter is facing more competition, particularly from Threads, the Mark Zuckerberg copycat site for Meta and other social platforms. And, you know, there were other features, if you would pay the extra money, where you'd see fewer ads and you would get higher placement when you replied to other users' posts. Ah, but not everybody who had their blue check restored is happy about it. Here's MSNBC host Katie Fang. What's with the random blue check I didn't ask for or pay for? Here's another left-wing commentator who also appears on that network, Ellie Mistel. To be clear, even though Elon has forced the mark of the beast upon me, without consent or permission, I will still make fun of people who paid for blue checks. And then there's a somebody from USC is quoted as saying, in a world where the celebrities and public figures refuse to pay for the check mark, then the verification loses its value. Elon has made a decision that there's two ways to get verified. One, prove who you are and pay money. The other, earn it through popularity. So Elon isn't just doing this out of the goodness of his heart. And it's just funny. It was such a huge uproar at the time. And now I think most people don't even look at it. I mean, the whole point of the verification process predating Elon Musk was that you could trust that if you saw, you know, Kim Kardashian or Dan Rather or me or Wolf Blitzer or whoever with a blue check mark, that this was the real account. This wasn't a parody account. This wasn't somebody, you know, changing something slightly to make fun of the person. But then, with particularly the libs being increasingly ticked off at Musk's, let's just say, conservative commentary and anti-media commentary, which he's entitled to do because he owns the place. Has lost a hell of a lot of money on it. And sales at Tesla are down too, maybe because of increased competition from other electric vehicle makers, but also because of Elon's high visibility politics. Anyway, that's the latest on the blue checks, whether people want it or not, they're getting it. Maybe I'll just get rid of mine. But Elon Musk is trying to make sure that Twitter remains a place to go to see the high-profile people you're interested in. Which makes you wonder why he did this in the first place. Well, I mean, the answer is obvious, money. $8 a month may not sound like much, but if you have thousands and thousands of people paying it, it can add up. It's just fascinating, the media debates that we have here and the political debates that we have here are increasingly and so much social media debates. And not just about X and not just about Threads, Snapchat, some of the competing services, Facebook, Instagram. Facebook and Instagram de-emphasizing political content because they don't think that's what people want. Well, next 6 months, they might want it a little bit more. Hey, thanks for being along for the ride. We'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.